Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
I'm so curious with all of these like social media fame, whether it's Instagram or YouTube, like what's going to happen when we all become geriatrics? Like
I know.
When, you know, are there going to be retiree YouTubers? Or
yeah, exactly, the YouTuber home, do you know what I mean? Or something like that.
Tyler Oakley just going to YouTube till his hair goes actually silver?
I think so. He just celebrated his 10th anniversary.
Oh, man.
It was an emotional video.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I love it. He listens, you know.
I'm hi, Tyler. I think your Sped Up Witches rap video was where you peaked. I think that might have been in year two or three. One of my favorites.
I think my favorite was a really early one as well. And it was him talking about a one night stand. And it's not on YouTube anymore because of, you know, branding and stuff.
He's really gone downhill with his wholesome, you know, retail.
I know.
Those were the days.
Gay one night stand, that's what I want.
We had to walk uphill both ways to get our YouTubes.
Will somebody get us another drink?
Welcome to Jim and Tomic's Musical Theatre Happy Hour, your weekly podcast with Tonic and Tableau.
Ooh.
That is the AUX form, that is the plural. It's hard to tell.
Is the AUX, is the plural, is multiple tableau? Are they both
tableau.
Pronounced the same? What's this? The singular is also tableau, but without the X?
It's just without the X, yep. Think of gatto or chateau.
Okay. Chateau X. You have multiple chateaus.
Chatox. So tableau.
Chatox is my favorite drag queen.
Chatox. He could be good. Tableau is probably one of the first drama terms I ever learned, and I did not know what it meant.
It's a good one. That would be in my nonverbals unit if I was still teaching acting, which is like unit one or two.
Mm-hmm.
Stage.
Well,
picture.
I thought it meant because we did it the first time we did a tableau. We kind of did it in like a carousel form, so like there were a number of tableaux.
Uh huh.
And we went round them, like, and I thought that's what it always had to be.
Ah.
So if anyone ever said tableau, I expected there to be, like, you know, five other people in a circle around me. Do you know what I mean? That was
like
very
a
confused.
Really specific, contrived picture device.
But, you know, you learn.
Yep.
So, hey, hear that?
I do.
What are you drinking? It didn't sound like water.
Wait, is that water you're drinking? Are you going to turn it into wine?
Oh my gosh. Stop it. Yes. Watch, are you ready?
I'm ready. This visual trick is great for our audio pod. Wow, that's amazing.
It's wine.
How did you do that?
I can't give away my secrets.
Me, I'm drinking like one fish, but it's actually like 5,000.
Oh,
you know,
okay. Nice.
Like you drink a fish.
You could drink a fish. If it was like, you know, like blended up.
Gross. I'm getting sick thinking about it.
Are there any like fish milkshakes or like fish, like fish drinks?
This is disgusting.
I feel like that's a thing. That surely has to be a thing.
Absolutely disgusting.
You drink the juice from a prawn or a, what do you call them?
Prawn we would call, yeah, but I don't think that's a thing we do in America.
You do it in New Orleans. You like drink out the juice, the brain juice.
We don't have fish. There are no oceans here.
There are no oceans in New York. Oh, I did a really successful pub quiz.
Yeah.
The day, and I used a couple of questions from the podcast. So just goes to show how many people who were attending it listened to the podcast.
That's awesome.
I know.
Speaking of.
Yeah.
I have a quiz question.
Hey, that wasn't the segue I was going for, but yeah, okay.
You ready? Surprise segue.
I'm so ready.
Some people argue that this musical we're talking about today features the music of Felix Mendelssohn and his violin concerto in E minor. Mendelssohn remains uncredited to this day. What show? What show are we talking about, Jimmy?
I don't know what it could could be. Am I singing Mendelssohn or am I saying Andrew Lloyd Webber's Jesus Christ Superstar?
My mind is clearer now. At last, all too well, I can see where we all soon will be. If you'd strip away the myth from the man, you will see where we all soon will be. Jesus, you started to believe the things they say of you. You really do believe this talk of God is true. And all that you've done will soon get swept away. You've begun to matter more than the things you say.
That was good, right? That was quite fun.
That was lots of fun. Look at us go.
A musical joke. Also, I've been watching Community a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I say a lot. I've binge-watched all six seasons in about a week. So I'm now constantly acting like Dean Pelton. So that's, I do apologize.
That's a good choice, I think. I think it's a solid choice, and you should lean into it.
I should dean into it.
Get Jeffrey. Out of here. Done. Hanging up on the Skype call.
Do you ever do that, though? Do you ever, like, watch that and then, like, start, like, I don't know, like, visual empathy or something?
Where you start imitating a fictional basically, character from the thing you're watching? I get made fun of, my boyfriend makes fun of me every time, every once in a while, I turn into Rob Lowe from Community, no, Parks and Rec. Literally, it is sometimes a little overwhelming how often I fall into this trap.
You really do. It's by the way, I'm sure your boyfriend is very happy if you turn into Rob Lowe every once in a while.
Hey, you know, it's...
if you know what I mean.
It's unexpected, though, sometimes, and it's just a little scary, because he's like, who's this stranger in our house? And I'm like, oh, sorry, I'm Rob Lowe temporarily.
Rob Lowe can walk into my house any day. Anyway, this is weird. So, yes, we're talking about Jesus Christ Superstar. Hooray! With, of course, the music by Andrew Lloyd Webber, and the lyrics by Mr. Tim Rice. Tim Rice again, Tommy.
Why are we doing this? why must you put me through this? We have done... all right, we'll get into it. Jesus Christ Superstar opened up Broadway in 1971, starring Ben Vereen. But didn't it have a concept album before that made it popular?
Yeah, so it originally was just a concept album with Ian Gillan from Deep Purple. Yeah, that was how it was just kind of originally to be, and then it got stuck on the stage and kind of existed from there.
Yeah.
But I think the concert album, it was really successful.
It was super successful.
Billboard Top 100, blah, blah, blah.
Lloyd Webber talks about it being one of the reasons why the show was able to get produced, because it felt kind of daring and dangerous. And the popularity of the album made it more comfortable to actually put it in a theater.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And as well, like at this stage, this is early ALW, so yeah. I think he was only 21 when he composed it.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd only really done Joseph before, which was, you know, a show for school. So it wasn't like, oh, you're a Broadway vet.
Yeah.
Off you pop. So it was, you know, they took a risk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it eventually paid off, maybe? Question mark?
Maybe.
And then it came over here very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. Opened at the Palace in 1972. And it's had like a couple of revivals along the way across the pond here. It's currently revived in our old favourite Regent's Park open air theatre.
Yeah.
Where you can go see it right now, I think. I don't know if it's still open.
Yeah. And I think there's a film from the 70s, which is very 70s, and then there's like a made for TV ish film,
kind of like a PBS special, that kind of thing, of the 2000s production that toured. I don't think it was ever on the West End, but it did tour.
Yeah, and so it feels very Backstreet Boys in early 2000s, which, you know, we may look back on in another 40 years and feel like how I feel about the 70s.
Yeah, that's fair. But it does have Tony Vincent in it.
This is true.
And he has frosted tips, and I am all about that. I think he's incredible. Okie dokie, so what is Jesus Christ Superstar? Or should I be asking you, or should I feel this one because you just like vomit or something?
Jesus Christ Superstar is a musical retelling of The Passion of the Christ.
It is. And I'm going to ignore it and it'll go away. It is. And it's very much taking into account sort of Jesus as a human and how Judas plays into the story. So it's less from a biblical perspective.
Yeah.
And more of a kind of allegorical human perspective.
Yeah, definitely a deep dive into the character of Judas, more so than I think a lot of adaptations that go this route.
More so than anything.
And it's a rock concert. It's a rock, you know, concept album, and there is this play on Jesus being a superstar and how, you know, the metaphor of him being a rock star and how that plays into maybe his fame is working against his mission of spreading peace and love.
It's definitely about kind of the fame monster and how that eats away at you.
Yeah.
Which is very topical for the 70s. You know what I mean? Because we're really starting getting into rock stars becoming a thing.
Yeah. And there's a huge juxtaposition of that kind of rock star persona onto this very traditional biblical story, which I think that's one of the big struggles between all productions of this is which way do you lean? More in the biblical sense or more in the rock star sense?
And yeah.
I'm sure we'll talk about it.
Oh, we will. We will. Shall we dive right on in?
Let's go.
Kersplash.
Try not to get worried. Try not to turn on to problems that upset you all. Don't you know everything's all right? Yes, everything's fine. And we want you to sleep well tonight. Let the world turn without you tonight. If we try, we'll get by. So forget all about us tonight.
It's all right, yes, everything's all right, yes.
Sleep and I shall soothe you, calm you, and anoint you for your hot forehead. Then you feel everything's all right, yes, everything's fine. And it's cool.
Well, I think let's get it right out of the way at the start. Get all your moaning, get all your bitching about Andrew Lloyd Webber. Okay. Let's sweep under the carpet.
It's not my least favorite Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Holy shit.
I know. Shocking. I find Jesus Christ Superstar, I listened to very early on. I remember taking this out of my local library when I was like, musicals are a thing. I'm going to take out 20 CDs right now. And it kind of existed in that, you know, blob of musical theater for me for a while and never really stuck out. I think, and, you know, my biases are showing, but I think Jesus stories are lazy. I think Jesus adaptations are lazy. I think this story shows Andrew Lloyd Webber's laziness, especially early on, especially coming right after another biblical story, Joseph. You're taking a story. You're not spending time on the story because it already exists. And what I was going to say is you're not putting your own personal spin on it. I think Jesus Christ Superstar does a better job of putting your own personal spin on it than something like Joseph does, which is Joseph is pretty much a straight retelling with just contemporary musical theater songs, contemporary for the time. Whereas Jesus Christ Superstar has, you know, It was controversial enough to make people want to protest it, which means it's doing something against the normal story. But I also think people just like to protest things. But I think especially Jesus' passion stories are kind of lazy. And it's bugged me since Catholic school how non-climactic the passion story is. Not that there's not like a, you know, peak to the story, but it's not A to B to C to D to E when you follow it. Like all parables are, like all biblical stories are. Like it's like, and then he, you know, went into the temple square and overturned a bunch of tables, and then they went and ate dinner. And like, there's not, you know, more contemporary stories have more purpose. And I think one of the key questions with any piece of theater, with any story, is like, why this story? Why now? Why tell it? What's the point? And with Jesus stories, the reason you tell it is because it's a Jesus story, which is, you know, circular logic and bugs me and bothers me. And then attach Andrew Lloyd Webber to it, and not my favorite.
Okay. Cool. Thanks for that, Tori. So this is where I disagree with everything you just say. The classic Android Webber format. Well, what I would first of all say is, I think he was actually asked to do it on the back of Joseph.
Okay.
It wasn't like, you know, his, pardon the pun, passion project that he wanted to do. But yeah, it was someone, I think, from the church thought it would be a really, really good idea to do a musical theatre retelling of The Passion, specifically The Passion, because obviously we have had Godspell, which is very much just a kind of play-by-play of The Passion. Do you know what I mean? In terms of its second act.
Yes, in terms of its second act. I mean, this is more of a play-by-play than Godspell is.
Well, see, this is where I would disagree with you, because what you're saying about the passion story being the thing that everyone talks about. And I would actually agree with that. I think you see it everywhere because it's one of those epigenetic stories that we all know about. But what I would say is no one's actually ever told the story from a human perspective. Do you know what I mean? Which is what Android Webber does. And I think does it extremely well. And no one really looks at it from Judas's perspective, and you know, makes Judas a really, really sympathetic character. That is a risky thing to do. Especially in the 70s, kind of, because what we were getting there with the kind of rise of the hippie generation and the counterculture starting to really creep in, people were starting to question things a lot more. So this was very much on the fringe. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like he does it really, really well. And I don't think this is a story that's been told before and a story that has been told since necessarily. Like, there's a play I know that's really, really good called The Last Days of Judas Iscariot, which, again, is kind of the passion or the, you know, the end of Judas from Judas's perspective. Is Judas in purgatory and kind of working through, he's on trial. But I don't think, certainly in musical theatre, anyone's ever told this story. So I do disagree that it's lazy, because I feel like what he's done is, okay, I've got the passion. Well, how can I tell this story and make it relevant, make it different? So I think of all the Jesus adaptations, this is probably one of the least lazy.
Yes, I agree with you. Which is weird because you disagree with me. So, you know, how does that work? I think the most riveting part of the story is the Judas story. I think what bothers me is this is not, it's not Judas the musical. There are other part, we spend time on the other parts of this story without Judas present, which I think works counter to the intended, if the intended purpose is tell the story of Judas Iscariot. You know, which it starts with him. Like, he's the narrator. We could have a discussion about who's the protagonist in the show, but I think there's justification that Judas could be it. Even though the last quarter, well, he does come back from the dead. So he's in it a lot. But we don't, the whole show is not about how, like, if I were writing Judas Iscariot the musical, a la Jesus Christ Superstar, there are parts of this musical I would omit. There are parts that I would skip over, like in Into the Woods when you skip over Jack seeing the giant in the sky. We know. Mm-hmm. We understand he gets 40 lashes. Yes, it can happen off stage for 30 seconds. You know, we spend a lot of time with, like, whether it's King Herod's song, which I love and would be ashamed to cut, but, like, is not, you know. This, I think, is why I agree with you and still don't like this show, because I feel the other parts of this show strongly, and it seems scattershot and not as riveting and concise as the Judas Iscariot through line, which, you know, bothers me is too strong of a word, but it makes it feel messy.
Right. Okay. That's because, again, I would say I think that what Judas and Jesus are is they're fantastic kind of poles, because I would say you could easily argue that they're both protagonists in the story.
That's true.
Because they have their own fixed viewpoint and are going with it, and both are flawed, and both have their own conclusion. So kind of what they do is they just run alongside. Obviously, their stories intertwine, but they are actually kind of telling their own tale. With Judas, obviously, it's much more he's looking at it from an almost political perspective, that Judas was in the Bible.
Right.
And with Jesus, it's him kind of trying to find the balance between having this popularity and dealing with the obligations that come with it, basically, and trying to keep a balance.
Yeah.
And they kind of fight, you know, along the way.
I wish Jesus was more active in that fight. I wish Jesus matched Judas's activity in the musical. I think this is a trope a lot of Jesus adaptations fall into. Is like Jesus becomes this mildly passive, all-knowing, like, all will, you know, how dare you judge, lest you be judged, you know, I will Confucius say this proverb sort of thing. And I think this comes to interpretation and maybe is more based on the adaptations I've watched, but I would love to see the same struggle that Judas feels in Jesus. And the problem is, for Jesus, this is all set in stone. For the biblical character of Jesus, this must happen. I must die for your sins. From the moment this show begins, you know, he is established in that. And we do see some, like, why must I die? Like, some exploration of that. But it's not like a, you know, he's not contemplating making a run for it. You know what
well,
I mean?
I think he kind of is and he isn't. Because if you think about the plagues after the temple, obviously goes into the temple, goes crazy. Not the plague, sorry, the lepers.
The lepers, yeah.
You know, his line at the end of there's too many of you, there's too little of me, heal yourselves.
Yeah.
That's a fall from grace for Jesus Christ, who is this kind of ethereal, you know, perfect man. So that's the first kind of tearing away of him.
Yeah.
And then you see the rest of his faults kind of reflected in someone like Mary Magdalene, where, you know, she's like, I don't know how to love it. I don't know how to... to take him, I'm just quoting the song. Well done, Tim Rice. Very good. Clearly. But yeah, and she is able to provide another kind of look in to his life.
Yeah.
In the same way, I would say that the Pharisees are able to give you another look into Judas's life. I don't know. I think it's expertly constructed.
Yeah. I wonder if I just haven't seen the adaptation that gets me yet. I think that might be a little bit of it.
Because I feel like you can't listen to Gethsemane and not think, wow, he's really going through it. Like, it's been written as this huge rock ballad because it's this pure, it's just 5 million question marks pouring out at once, and there's nothing else you can do but really just kind of scream in frustration. And it's, I think it's an incredible song for that reason.
No, I think that's true. I think you're convincing me. which I don't.
I really love this show.
Which I don't enjoy.
I really, really love it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it comes from your thing against Andrew Lloyd Webber.
I think it's an unfortunate combo platter. It's my thing against Andrew Lloyd Webber and my being a gay kid in a Catholic school thing.
Yeah, okay, interesting. Yeah, uh-huh.
And that immediately colors my viewing of any kind of biblical adaptation.
Right, okay. Because, no, I just think it is really, really strong, and I think there's lots in it to really look at and question, especially nowadays. I think it's more relevant than ever. And I think anything that can stand that test of time, where something like Godspell almost doesn't as well, I would say. I think it's maybe just a bit too ambiguous and a bit too set in hippie culture
to
stand the test of time. Whereas, you know, the JC productions that are on at the moment, you're just like, well, I fully get this.
No, it definitely,
for lots of reasons,
hit on something about, you know, whether it's the fame monster or I think the whole superstar trope that makes it decisively more timeless than something like Godspell or something like Hair, which is very rooted in the hippie counterculture movement generation.
Yeah. So there we go. I'm just going to take that as a win, and we'll move on really, really quickly.
Andrew Lloyd Webber plagiarizes songs, and it pisses me off.
He does, but he was young, bless him.
So what?
Everyone does it, Tommy.
No, everyone does it. Maybe Stephen Sondheim does not. He only plagiarizes off of himself, and that's fine.
That's fine, but Stephen Sondheim's the best one.
Yeah, and Andrew Lloyd Webber's not.
No, we know. Anyway, that's not what we're arguing about today. We're discussing Jesus Christ Superstar. But you almost made a good segue. I think you ruined it. Because we're talking about 70s freneticism.
The 70s. Let's talk about the 70s. Our ideals die around us, and all because of you. But that is cut of all. Someone has to turn you in. Like a common criminal. Like a wounded animal. A jaded mandarin. A jaded mandarin. Like a jaded, a faded, faded, jaded, jaded mandarin. Get out! They're waiting! Get out! They're waiting! Oh, they're waiting for you! Every time I look at you, I don't understand why you let the things you did get so out of hand. You would have managed better if you'd had it planned.
So you kind of hit on it earlier about the movie. I think that's really... Do you know what I mean? So I think, first of all, listeners, watch the movie if you want.
Watch clips of the movie. Do not subject yourself to the entire 70s movie. Jimmy, I made my boyfriend watch this one again. The last musical movie he watched with me was Hair and Godspell. He's done all of them now.
He's ticked all those boxes.
We finished it, and he was like, I think I just don't like the 70s.
Yeah, but isn't it funny that I'm the complete opposite? Because, I think... I love it because it's so ridiculous and so strange.
Oh, it's Do you know what I mean? It's so oddball. It's so weird.
But there's, I think of all of the, for the three of them, let's call them the triumvirate, the 70s triumvirate. I would say Jesus Christ Superstar is probably my least favorite of the movies.
Yeah.
Just because I don't think it should be set in a desert.
No, I think it...
Do you know
it,
what I mean? I think
it downplays... I think Jesus Christ Superstar, of those three, works the least best as a movie. Because it is about this fame and performance and concert. And, you can't... A layer's removed when you make it a movie.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, it's also the closest to being a regular book musical. Yeah. Is there any of the... You know, is any of the others. So... I would say in that respect, you kind of, your instinct, your directorial instinct would be, oh, well, then if it's a book, then it has to have a narrative. So therefore, we're kind of, we'll set it in the time.
And and Jesus should look like Jesus, and we should be in the desert. And
exactly. Yeah. And sure, you can kind of flash forward with, you know, the song Superstar, and you're like, hey, it's contemporary again. But there's, as an other, it's just as it was a weird blend.
It does feel before. I do think Jesus Christ Superstar feels before its time. I think it's grown into, like, it's certainly, I don't think Jesus Christ Superstar could have happened outside of the 70s. I think there's something very attached to this revolution of thought that we're feeling in the 70s that made it exist. Yeah. But I think the things it taps on are something that audiences in the 80s, or absolutely the MTV generation of the 90s and the 2000s, can attach themselves a little more to than the free love and peace of the 70s.
Yeah, I would agree. It'd be strange. Yeah, I can't actually imagine what it would look like. And I think it's one of those things, like, it needed to kind of be at the birth of rock, because it has a very pure, you know, that pure rock sound. I feel like if it was made nowadays, it would just be kind of flattened out a lot more, maybe.
And you do see this even in, like, the 2000 movie. There is something that kind of gets a little more into the, like, the traditional musical theater land, which I think makes it more accessible to contemporary audiences, but works against the core of it.
What it is. Yeah, I would agree. I think if you're watching it, watch, if you want a really good dose of, like, 70s, watch Simon the Zealot.
Yeah.
His song, because that is crazy.
And then watch King Herod's song.
And then watch King Herod, yes, exactly, for a bit of contextual, like, 70s.
My boyfriend's jaw dropped and was like, what? Is this the same movie?
Nobody knows.
It's like out of nowhere. That whole song is out of nowhere anyway. But then in that movie,
that. Yeah. It's funny. But what it does feature is some very talented actors.
Yes.
Specifically Carl Anderson and Ted Neely, who plays Jesus. And I think, like, in terms of portrayals, probably the best, I would say.
How many Jesus portrayals have you seen?
A lot. I really, really like this show.
Oh, in this show, okay. I thought you were saying one of the best portrayals of Jesus.
Oh, just Jesus
in
Christ? No.
He does the best Jesus I have ever seen.
It's just so believable. Honestly, I felt he was in the room with me. No. And Jesus Christ Superstar is one of the best Jesuses.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. Because, no, I have seen a lot. Like, we've got like Glenn Carter, who was in the 2000 TV version, is fine, but he's a bit, I don't know, I find him odd. And then Ben Forster, who did the recent arena tour, I really didn't take to, actually.
Really?
We'll talk about that later. Okay. Yeah, I really, really didn't take to him. But I think just, I think it comes from the 70s. They know exactly what they're doing, because it's why I love the original hair. More so than anything else that's ever come later, because it's real, it's authentic, and there is just something that you can't capture nowadays that they had back then.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. I mean, even the 70s movie, for how ridiculous and strange it is to our contemporary eye, and I think even, I read somewhere that Andrew Lloyd Webber did not like it.
He didn't like the original production, didn't like the film.
Yeah, but there is, I mean, you know, it feels like Burning Man. You send a bunch of hippies out into the desert to, like, do their thing. There's something very visceral about that. Yeah. And, like, where contemporary Burning Man is already kind of commercialized. But in the 70s, you know, you're watching this movie and you kind of know that even these actors, who to an extent are pretending to be actors, because like, got in a bus and drove into the desert to do this Jesus thing, and, you know, the realness of that is something that I don't think we would be able to capture in 2017, even if we tried really hard.
Yeah, I would agree. It would just need to be a different thing, which they have done, and there are definitely really good productions that exist nowadays, but you couldn't do that authentic yeah. dusty 70s kind of thing.
They all look like homeless people.
They do. I love, though, that they just abandoned that whole we're actors thing.
It's a weird...
Let's get dressed up, right. and then we'll do the show, and then we'll go again. And it's just like... Why?
Was it because you wanted to feature the overture and needed something to do while the overture happened?
Right, exactly.
Why can't we just do like desert shots or like, I don't know.
Or Jesus just, I don't know, do more of that weird dancing and just extend that for a little bit longer.
How about this? Cut the overture.
No. Oh my God, I love this overture.
The overture is pretty good.
Oh, it's so... That guitar riff.
It pains me. It pains me to say how good it is, Jimmy.
It's so... Just see when you hear it, you're just like, yeah!
Well, and
you're
right
in there.
It's bizarre. Because they don't call it an overture. Don't they call it an opening, too?
Yeah, potentially.
Or something like that. But like, pre-heaven on their minds. It's, you know... It's not a little bite-sized... candy tray of all the songs you're going to hear featured throughout the musical that an overture would have been in the 50s and 60s. It's bizarre and strange and atonal and rock.
Exactly. And it sets you up for a strange evening.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I feel doesn't really get that strange until, well, maybe until right at the end. But, do you know, I feel like the overture, you make you think, this is going to be frenetic, it's going to be crazy. And then it kind of just goes normal for a long time.
It's a linear story. There are human being characters who say human being things. You know.
And the music is rocky, but it's not, it's not
weird. The only times we kind of like push the supernatural really is like Judas coming back to life. Because we don't, like Jesus dies and that's it. We don't even do Easter. So... Yeah, it is as bizarre as the overture is. It, you know, the musical is not.
No, I do. Just before we move away from the 70s, I do just want to talk about Ben Vereen, because I've never had an opportunity to talk about Ben Vereen.
He's a magical human being.
Yeah, my like tagline on stuff is when I grow up, I want to be Ben Vereen, and that's still true.
Yeah,
that's still true. I tweeted him.
Uh huh.
Yeah. I tweeted him a picture of him. I think he was doing this, which is, you can see that pose, right?
Yes, but describe it to our audio listeners.
Like, imagine Ben Vereen in a pose. Is that? I'll put it on the show notes. But he had claws coming out.
Uh-huh.
And it was Ben Vereen, like Wolverine kind of thing. And I tweeted him it, and I think he liked it. So that was my life made. That's my life absolutely made on that day.
When Ben Vereen likes your status, you know you've made it.
You're totally there. But no, so why are we talking about Ben Vereen? Good question. Basically because he originated the role of Judas on Broadway, but then he got ill.
Yeah.
So Carl Anderson kind of supplanted him, and then now nobody remembers Ben Vereen as Judas, and it's really sad.
Which is a damn shame.
Because he does a great performance. There are some clips.
Sure.
Is such a good performance.
Yeah.
It's Ben Vereen, man. Like,
I mean, what a legend. Ben Vereen made 70s musical theater. Like, it is.
That's one of the reasons why I love it so much. Is just
it is
because
the Ben Vereen
he's there.
Era between this and Pippin and everything else.
Like, it's. He's just a queen, and I love him. I love you, Ben.
Do you think Ben Vereen listens to podcasts?
I think if he was going to listen to a podcast, he'd listen to this one. Maybe. That'd be good though, wouldn't it? I wonder if you have any like secret mega stars who are tuning in right now.
Hello.
Hey.
We're sorry if we say weird things about you.
I know. Post on Reddit. Comment.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater. SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
As you know I love you, if you see our way, believe and you're in God, so tell me, Jazz, hey, Christ, you know I love you. Did you see our way? I believe in you in God, so tell me that I'm saved. Jesus, I'm with you. Touch me, touch me, Jesus. Jesus, I'm on your side. Kiss me, kiss me, Jesus.
There must be over 50,000 screaming love and hope for you.
Love, love, love.
Every one of 50,000 would do whatever you ask them to. But add a touch of hate at Rome, you will rise to a greater power. We will win ourselves a home. You'll get the power and the glory,
glory.
Forever and ever, ever. You'll get the power.
Okay, let's go into a wee bit more about the actual the banging tunes. The banging tunes. Because I think it's got some. But what I do want to address is the elephant in the room.
Before we address the elephant in the room, I would like to point out that you said, I want to talk about the banging tunes in the show. I think it's got some.
It has some. Yeah. It does. It has some.
It has some. Only a few.
Well, are you literally defending Jesus Christ Superstar?
No, I'm saying that, like...
Let's take a snapshot of this.
I'm saying, like, 65% of the songs in this show are bizarre and unmemorable.
Do you think?
I do.
Fascinating. Well, we'll discuss that this section. But I do want to address the elephant in the room, and that elephant is Mary Magdalene. Because... Is it my least favorite female part in musical theater? Potentially.
Why?
She does nothing. She's pointless. I think she's really, really pointless. I've kind of said before about what she is, and she is just another way for you to look at Jesus.
Yeah.
You're
feeling my disdain for Jesus adaptations.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing. But, like, I feel... I'm trying to think of another adaptation that where she's an interesting character.
The Da Vinci Code.
I mean, yeah, there you go. Yeah. Like that, the fair. Yeah.
But that's the thing, right? Mary Magdalene is in this story because it's a Jesus story, and we have to have Mary Magdalene because it's a Jesus story.
But you also have to have a female, and she's the only one.
That's true. Yeah, so maybe we're talking more about the chauvinism of the Bible than anything else.
Yeah, to be honest. I'm going to give a shout out to a company. I'm not going to say their name because technically they should have done it. But I'm going to give a shout out to a company that I saw a Fringe last year do it. And they had all the Pharisees as female.
Oh, interesting.
And it was the most kick-ass thing I've ever seen.
That's pretty great. Did they still wear giant butt plug hats?
They did not, which is good. Oh, no. They did, but no, they just wore the pie hats, like the ones that look like cakes.
Not the ridiculous ones.
But they did like a 5-part harmony for the end of Jesus Must Die,
ooh,
like soprano, like gospel harmony, and it was the best thing that I've ever seen. Yeah, ever.
That's fun. That makes I like that.
Yeah. It wasn't like this feels weird. Yeah. It was just like this is absolutely fine and nobody minds.
No, and I think it shifts the focus in a good way too.
Oh, exactly. Because you're not making a Jesus or a Judas a female, which is it brings another questions. Because it was the same. We talked about this in Godspell actually, and Stephen Schwartz is quite open about it in Godspell that he doesn't think Judas should be played by a female because it changes things.
Yeah, an interesting heteronormative, but that's what we assume, relationship that would happen there, whereas we assume a friend relationship with same-sex people.
For sure. But I just feel like Mary Magdalene could do with at least another song, like at least one, where she's like, I don't know, talks about herself,
mm-hmm.
a bit more, you know, or history. Yeah. I don't
Wouldn't
know.
That be
I
great?
Just want
anything.
Something.
Yeah. Well, just kind of something that gives her at least a little bit of depth that Judas has. You know?
Yeah, just something. Just something.
A song that's not particularly about Jesus. Or maybe is, but isn't like doting on him.
I think that's it. It's like, you know, and I guess there's not really any room for it, and I get that, that's fine, but
no, you could do it. There's room. Put it in Act Two when he's walking up the hill with the cross about how sad she is. Like,
do you know what I would do?
Mm-hmm.
I would take out Herod's song.
Which would make me sad, but I understand why.
Yeah.
I think Herod's song is the most catchy song in this show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I hate it. I've played King Herod, so I'm coming at it from a, you know, reasoned perspective here.
Did you have a cane?
I didn't have a cane.
Did you have a hat?
I am disappointed. I'll show you the picture. I look pretty damn good. I had a white coat and a kick line of girls. It was pretty much like Rick Mayall from the 2001.
Okay.
And it was fine. But I hate the song. I really do. I really dislike it.
Yeah.
Why? I think the jokes are funny in it, and I think Tim Rice has written good lyrics with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well done. But in the context of the whole show, I think mm-hmm. it's so unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
It's so detracting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get why it is where it is, other mm-hmm. than the fact that it needs to be there because that's what happened in the story.
Yep.
But I think it pulls you right out. And I've yet to see a performance of it where I'm like, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
You're feeling my disdain for Jesus stories.
Yeah, I know. But it doesn't need to be there. Do you know what I mean?
I think the reason it comes right after 40 Lashes, right?
No. Before.
Before?
That's the whole point. So Pilate's like, you're not,
totally
who
right.
is this
yeah.
broken man? That's such a good bit. And then he's like, you're Herod's case.
There's a bunch of I mean, I think...
Jesus.
So, okay, if we're going to justify why the song is here, it's because we need a happy song in Act Two.
I don't know, though, because, like...
Because otherwise, it is going to be a drudge of an act. Sad, 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 with more sad.
But you've got Superstar. That's the thing, though. You've got Superstar there, which is the climax of the whole show, and it is upbeat as anything. And yes, it's full of irony.
It's upbeat, but it's not funny. It's
But there's no other funny song in the show. Do you know what I mean? Like, other funny song.
There are mildly comedic songs. What should we do about Jesus of Nazareth?
Yeah, that's not laugh a minute. That's just
It's not like, sad.
But Superstar is not sad.
Yeah, but there's a sense of irony to it. And we've seen because Judas was dead until right now, like it's dark, you know.
I don't think it is dark. I don't think it is. I think it's the sting in the tail. And it's not that kind of like, huh? You know, feeling. I don't think it's like, oh my god, I can't cope with this agony of feeling. I think it's a catharsis moment, and then the show like ends, which is really important.
Yeah.
So
I don't understand what you mean, but it's funny.
The
show ends, which is important because otherwise it would still be happening.
It would still be happening. Yeah. But no, I just
I agree,
and it might just be biased because I played it and I didn't enjoy it, but
yeah. I think it's the least necessary song of the show, but, you know, I don't think
anything
is necessary.
At least, like, write it, but make it not a weird, like, you know, 1930s caper. Do you know what I mean? Don't give me a Tin Pan Alley and a rock musical. Like, I don't want... You can do fun rock things.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I mean, who... So, okay, but then... Who is, if Jesus is a rock star, then who would Herod be? Because Herod has, you know, Herod is the king, is the superstar de facto before Jesus comes in. He's like, oh, so you're the king now. And so if Jesus is a rock and roll rock star, then I think there is justification to give Herod a vaudeville number. A previous performative genre.
What about instead of a like vaudeville kind of thing, what about something like a Donny Osmond style ballad, like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like a crooner. Like,
I think you could do that too.
I think that's like a rock and roll as opposed to rock.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I do think the way to make Herod work is to make him a superstar. Is to make him like yesterday's superstar. Because that is why he has these questions like, so you're the next Jonas brother. Well, tell me what your deal is, because I've been doing this for a long time. Oh, it's nothing? Oh, well, F you, get out of my floating pontoon pond, yeah. You know?
Yeah, maybe I just want it with more irony then. Maybe I want more, because at the moment I just feel it's like, it just takes you right out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's annoying. Because everyone's laughing at it, and they're laughing because it's stupid. They're not laughing because Herod's an idiot. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're laughing because it's a stupid song.
Yeah. And
that annoys me.
And I think they don't play up enough the progression of the story. Like, take him away, he's got nothing to say, get out, get out, get out, isn't like, well, this was your chance to redeem yourself and, you know, not be crucified, but clearly you've messed that up, and so now you're going to leave.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
If that justification was a little stronger, it might read better.
Yeah. You almost want Jesus to be able to say something back as well, because he doesn't say anything for the whole number. And yes, that obviously annoys Herod, but I don't know, I feel like he should have a, like, and a, very much like a that's what you say that he says to Pilate.
Yeah.
I feel like he needs just a bit of something there.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that would help make Jesus more active and give him, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Help. I just hate it. Anyway. Heaven on their minds. Yay.
It's a good play on words. It's a great opening song.
Yeah. I think it's sensational. I remember the first time I heard it, I just didn't understand. Like, I was just like, what? You know, it was just like an odyssey number. Because vocally, it was unlike anything else I'd ever heard before in musical theater. Because again, I was like you, I listened to this really early on. And I was like, this is nuts. But then, you know, listening to it for, you know, however many years, and you start to really listen to what he's saying, and you just, the story unfolds perfectly in that number.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's a great opening number
for that reason. I think that the concept of this number is the most riveting part of the story to me. The idea that, you know, whoever they are, the disciples, the people, the, you know, soon to be Christians, have too much heaven on their minds, and this is Judas Iscariot's view that, like, the people around you are too concerned about doing enough good that they'll make it into the afterlife, so much so that they've forgotten that, like, the doing the good is the point.
Yep. And it's interesting because you do get a lot of discussion, obviously, with this show, and it's controversy, and people are like, well, do Christians like it? Do Christians not like it? And I've seen both sides of the coin.
Yeah.
But a lot of the Christians that do like it talk about it from that perspective, and they talk about it like it's like it is like a warning tale almost of you know, understand that you can get away with yourself and you can become zealous. And that's dangerous because you lose sight of why.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it contextualizing the story of the Passion beginning with this makes it, you know, Jesus was getting too popular, so now was time to go, which is interesting and is something that is not in the Bible and is not in, you know, Catholic studies. And I think it's fascinating. And whatever your belief system is a good lesson, you know, against zealotry, against, you know, this kind of idolization, which explicitly a lot of religions denounce, but implicitly there's a lot of, you know, but Jesus was a great person, and like, it doesn't matter, you know, you are a great person, be a great person.
Exactly.
And it's good. It's dangerous. It's fun.
It is. And that's the thing. With that being your opening gambit, like, hats off. Hats off to you. I do want to talk about The Last Supper, though, as just, like, again, what an incredible opportunity. You don't like it? Is it because he says Jaded Mandarin?
No.
It's okay.
It's because why is this song here?
Because they need a fight.
Yes. Okay. The Last Supper is a long song too. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I don't like it, I guess. I don't know. I have no good reason. I have no
because
good reason.
Because Adlon Weber wrote it?
Yeah. It doesn't read well to me. It doesn't stick out to me. It doesn't get.
Are you kidding? Stuck. I think it's the best. I think it's probably the best one in the show.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, genuinely, because it's just in terms of like a fight song.
Yeah,
I think it's unrivaled. I genuinely do. I think you know, Confrontation Les Mis, you're doing a great job, but here's The Last Supper, because just in terms of the way it's written, it's written at the peak of a male range for both guys.
Yeah,
and they are going at it, and it's just a really interesting musical way of having an argument where it's almost like they're trying to like out belt each other, and it's just so hearty. So it's because you're singing these notes, you can't help but bring that into your performance, and it generates some amazing performances, this number, and kind of bookended with the disciples singing the refrain of the "Look at all my trials and tribulations." Again, it's that sting of irony, and it really hits home that these guys are clueless. Do you know what I mean? Like they've just lost it now, and it really sets Judas and Jesus apart from them.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And I think lyrically, it's really bloody good.
Yeah, I have no good reason for not liking it.
Well, there you go. And then we can't talk about the songs of Judas Christ without talking about Gethsemane,
of course,
which is probably the biggest song from it. Well, maybe not. Maybe I Don't Know How to Love Him is the biggest song.
I Don't Know How to Love Him is memory. Like, it's whether or not it is important to the show, it is the biggest song from the show.
Yeah, which I just don't get.
Yeah,
because again,
you know, it's Sending the Clowns. It it's like it's not important to the show, but it's a good song, and so it has a life outside of the musical.
Yeah, but Gethsemane,
beautiful.
Absolutely, and I really like. I know we talked about it earlier, but I think it's so important that Jesus has this moment, because this is his. Everyone's asleep, so this is his soliloquy.
Yeah,
and you really get to see into the mind of Jesus, which is not something you ever really get to do in any sort of fiction.
Right.
So it's fascinating to see this turmoil that he's in.
Yeah.
And again, just vocal acrobatics, like,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Which we don't, I mean, that, I think that's another reason why this being written in the 70s is important. We wouldn't write a song like that now. We'd write a contemporary musical theater song.
Yeah, exactly. There'd be riffs and licks all over the place, whereas this is just like wail out whatever note it is. Yeah, and I must say, like, you need to watch this performance. So Ted Neely, who was the original, and was in the movie, he wasn't the original. He was an understudy, then was in the movie. He came back to do it in 2006.
Oh no! Wow.
I think he was 64 or something like that, and I just can't get over the performance, because he's aged, and vocally he's aged, but he's a rock star. Do you know what I mean? Like, he is a rock star, and that is a rock star singing a rock star song, and just the acting chops, just everything. So that is, if you've never looked at the show notes before, I would 100%
this go, is the time.
Yeah, I would 100%, because it's a sensation.
I'm going to click through to the show notes, because I haven't seen this, and this sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it's a sensation. And even if you don't like the song, even if you don't like the show, you're seeing a 64-year-old man who's had a whole career pour everything into this number. And you can tell it's one of those things, you can tell it means so much to him. Mm-hmm. It's that kind of thing. It's like Colm Wilkinson. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? When Colm Wilkinson comes back and sings Valjean, you're just like, you're do like, whatever yes, the hell you please. Want. You're the best. Yes. It's that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Really, really go and watch it. And he backphrases everything, but it's perfect. It works so well. I just don't... Ah, well done. Very, very impressed. Are you surprised at how much I love Jesus Christ Superstar?
I mean, you had mentioned it briefly, but it is... It's more than I expected.
Yeah, I really, really love it. I really love it. 70s, man.
Yeah.
70s.
You got a thing. Which would you prefer to go back to if you could visit? The 70s or Weimar Germany?
It's my Sophie's Choice. I mean, 100% the 70s because it's post-World War II.
I guess that's true, from a safety perspective. But just as a spectator, if you could experience the fun parts.
I would, oh gosh, that's really tough. That's really tough. Do you know what? I don't have an answer. I'll come back to you on that one.
Oh, I found it. I found the question. Jimmy's lost in thought. This is the end of the podcast. He's just going to be thinking about this question.
It's going to be. I want to say something just now and maybe go back on it later. I think Weimar, because there's probably so much that went unsaid.
Yeah,
whereas
that's
true. We've seen authentic the 70s. Things of the 70s. Yeah, yeah. We were there. Remember Woodstock?
but like, there's footage Weimar, of Woodstock.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean like. It's just because, isn't that what everyone says?
Right.
Yeah. You were at Woodstock or something like that? I don't know what they say. Something about Woodstock. Whereas we don't really know much about that. So yeah, I'm going to say that, but I would stick around
you
for
get
the
a,
war
you get a take
if that's
back-sy.
All right. But yeah, I may change my mind at some point. I'm Jesus in Gethsemane.
Aren't we all?
We are. Hey, that's not a bad segue.
Hey! We only do good segues.
By the way, that was really impressive because that was not set up. But let's talk about this. Let's talk about how Jesus Christ Superstar reflects us.
Then I was inspired. Now I'm sad and tired. After all, I've tried for 3 years, seems like 90. Why then am I scared to finish what I started? What you started, I didn't start it. God, thy will.
How does it reflect you?
I always feel like I'm going to put my foot in my mouth because there are plenty of really nice people who are more religious than me.
Mm-hmm.
I always find it baffling how many people have been convinced by the Jesus story over the years. Like, putting any of your religious assumptions aside, put yourself in the shoes of a total agnostic.
Mm-hmm.
And to look at the impact that this story about this one human being from 2017 years ago has had over the course of human history is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can you imagine if in 2,000 years we had the Church of Lin-Manuel Miranda and, like, all sang Hamilton every Sunday and, mm-hmm. you know, did weird, bizarre rituals in memory of him. This is how I feel about Jesus adaptations.
What I'm going to say to you, this might sound odd. What mm-hmm. I'm going to say to you is, to be honest, Tommy, that doesn't sound too odd.
Really?
Like, the way that the world is going, and this is the what I think about Jesus Christ Superstar, because actually I don't think it's a biblical story. I know that's, I know it's the, you know, using the story of the Bible,
but it feels more like a human story than a biblical story. For
yeah,
sure.
exactly. But what you just said about Lin-Manuel and people doing weird, you know, tributes to him, we're getting that right now. We don't even need 2,000 years.
I guess that's like, true. But we like, get that but that's
right now.
Right now is different, you know. The apostles walking around and telling the story of Jesus 20 years after his death is different than a guy in a robe standing in front of a church recreating a moment that happened 2 millennia ago.
Yeah, I guess that's but as in, yeah, no, I agree. That probably won't happen, but I don't think that's what Jesus Christ Superstar is.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes, the story is like, you know, I've taken this, it's almost like I've taken someone else's idea and I want to use that as a vehicle to talk
to tell
about
my
thing
own
that
stuff.
I want to talk about. But I think the whole idea of people doing weird rituals around Lin-Manuel Miranda is very, very, very on point when it comes to talking about Jesus Christ Superstar, because the thing is, the world that we live in, it's this.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's very true.
Zealotry is a whole new ballgame.
Yeah, and it does you know, point a magnifying glass at it. You know, it's all of Judas. It's, you know, too much heaven on their minds. You've become bigger than you should. Like, if we had just quieted down, none of this would have happened, and you could have gone on doing the wonderful, nice things that you do. But now that you have this fame category in your world, we're screwed.
Yeah. I mean, really, really. And especially because nowadays you pick up your phone and you can become famous. Mm-hmm. It's a really, really tricky thing.
Yeah. It's scary. I find it scary on a daily basis.
Because the thing is you're someone who has a small amount of influence in the world now.
It's,
you know,
terrifying.
What I mean?
Oh, it's terrifying.
Because that's a response. We've talked about this, about Comet in relation to that. It's a, it's a responsibility that you have that you didn't ask for.
No.
That isn't your intention, you know what I mean? That's not the intention,
right.
But that is the necessary evil.
Yeah.
And it's really, really difficult to kind of corral that.
Yeah.
I've got a friend who recently got a part on quite a big soap opera over here. And within a week of him getting it, he's been up for I think about a year now. Within a week of him getting it, I saw like 4 or 5 Instagram accounts, you know, fans of blah 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 blah, da 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 fans, da 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 da, I love da da da. And then you go in and you see, and it's like such and such liked on the 3rd of November 2017, such and such commented, da 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 da. And it's, I find it terrifying because what the hell is that?
Yeah. Well, and it's, I think there are, like, it gets worse. Like what comes to my mind. So BuzzFeed, the Try Guys, normally
what's the buzz?
Right. Feed? Normally I avoid saying the names of people I've known in real life. But I went to college with Keith from the Try Guys.
Right. Who are the Try Guys? Sorry.
They do BuzzFeed videos.
Okay.
They're 4 men, and they'll be like, today we're going to try on bras.
Are they the ones that looked at each other's penises?
Maybe, probably. That sounds like
them.
I've
seen that one.
They're like they're like the big money makers for BuzzFeed.
Okay.
I knew Keith in college.
Right.
I knew Keith before any of this.
Yeah.
And to see people who I didn't go to college, like before I started Musical Theater MASH, I would see people post videos that Keith was in that never knew him.
Yeah.
And that was weird and bothered me and made me feel uncomfortable from the beginning. But then accidentally, it's weird to say accidentally, I didn't do this by accident, but you know, unintentionally, sometimes running into people on the street and them being like, you're a Musical Theater MASH, is weird and terrifying. And it's a weird confrontation because they're really excited to see you.
Exactly.
They're like, oh, I know all about, I know what you feel like, I know the thing, I love the stuff you do, and it's a huge compliment, and so it's weird to feel awkward about that sort of thing, but, you know, who I am online is not who I am in real life. I don't think that's true. I don't think anyone is who they are online and in real life is the same person. And so the idea of fame, the concept of fame, you know, examined on its own is fascinating. But then, especially someone who, like, Jesus is probably the most famous person ever.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And, like, you got a lot of work to do if you're going to surpass Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be famous for, you know, at least 2,000 years, if not longer.
Yep.
That's insane. That's an insane amount of fame. And, the contemplation of that exists in this musical is why it's not my least favorite Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's that. I just feel like, how on the nose was it? Before celebrity culture was a thing.
Yeah.
This is a commentary on celebrity culture that's almost unrivaled. I don't know how they did it.
Yeah.
And it's scary because it's a weird self-fulfilling prophecy that it happens.
Yeah. I mean, we're seeing, you know, the Beatles were in the 60s. That's maybe when things... You know, when...
Yeah,
when
Beatles, Elvis Presley,
Elvis is Rolling coming Stones. Into fame. Like, we are starting to see this kind of fame culture. But, like, the point where fame becomes the thing instead of your art. Whereas before, if you were a musician, the thing people liked you for was your music and not you. And especially with the Beatles. I mean, of course, the Beatles. It became about the people and the personality and the things they do and, you know, going through their trash and finding the apple they ate half of. And that has nothing to do with the music that they made that you love.
Yeah.
But is totally about the fame.
Yeah.
You know, it's why, like, I would love to see a contemporary adaptation of Jesus Christ Superstar with, like, Lady Gaga as Jesus or something, you know?
Well, she could, that's the thing, is she could be, they are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what this is. Yeah. But I think what Jesus Christ Superstar talks about, again, that nobody, I don't think does, is the danger.
Mm-hmm.
The danger that comes with fame.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're getting much too loud.
Yeah.
What happens when your fans go too far?
Mm-hmm.
They close a show on Broadway.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, do you know what I mean? That's, I don't know. That, because that, honestly, that was the first time when Comet closed, I was like, oh, okay, this is a new world that we live in.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There may be other instances of it that I've not picked up on, but that was, you know, that's in my world.
Yeah.
And I was like,
and it's the one that affected you.
Fascinating.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, I think that's the thing. That's why this feels before its time. That's why it's, you know, successful in revival. Mm. It's why I think, as much as it pains me, Jesus Christ Superstar is a show to keep doing.
Because it's definitely about
that. And the double-edged sword of not only making you question the contemporary fame culture, but applying it to the very traditional religious existence that, you know, billions of people have is challenging and interesting, and I think at the end of the day good, as a lot of challenging things are, which is, it's nice, it's not nihilistic, it's not like fame is awful and destroys everyone, it's like fame is tricky and here's how you might deal, but beware, you know.
And I think it's really important to note that with Jesus Christ Superstar, they stop the story early.
Yeah.
And that's really crucial because that is what makes it this tale. Do you know what I mean? That's what makes it this warning tale, because Jesus doesn't come back at the end.
No.
Do you know what I mean? We don't wait 3 days and here he is and everything's fine.
Yeah.
It very much just ends and he is just a man and a cross.
Yeah.
And you don't get that prestige moment.
Yeah. No, even more so, and this is, depending upon how you read it, I think is fabulous, but is also a big middle finger to some people. Jesus doesn't get, you know, resurrected. Judas does.
That's
Judas comes back. We watch Judas die, and then he comes back. Clearly, as it, like, we're not pretending that Judas is alive. It's not like, oh, wow, unexpected. Yeah, but, like, the guy who plays it comes back on stage and sings a song in that very musical theater way. And that's, you know, under a certain reading is a big middle finger to certain sects of Catholicism, especially if you like, make Judas the mustache-twirling, snidely whiplash villain of your passion story.
Yeah.
To give him that resurrection and not give Jesus a resurrection is interesting.
Yeah. And it really says a lot.
It makes Jesus a human and Judas something else.
Mm-hmm. The warning, I mean, it's the warning tale. That's the,
yeah,
that's what it is. I just think it's so good. If you are in London, I'm not sure. Let's check and see if it's on. Let's see if it's still on. Oh no, it's done.
Oh, it's done. Oh, dang.
Yeah. So yeah, if you saw the open air one, let me know how it was. I've heard lots of good things. Mm-hmm. But I think actually, see, in terms of like recent hitting the nail on the head, I think the good one was the recent arena tour that they did in like early 2010 or whatever.
I've seen pictures.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can get it was filmed.
Oh really?
Yep, so you can get that. So that was the one. It had Tim Minchin, Mel C, Sporty Spice herself, and Chris Moyles, who you won't know.
Nope.
He's a DJ.
All right.
And they had this guy, Ben Forster, who... And this is where I want to kind of like end things on a question mark, is because Ben Forster was discovered... using a TV talent show. Members of the public become fans and vote for who they want to win. And I'm like, what? Like, for all the shows, first of all, you know, having your thing as who do you want to be Jesus is already just a little bit odd. but the fact that you're finding this character who's supposed to be this representation of, you know, someone at the pinnacle of fame and, you know, has a bunch of crazed fans.
Yeah.
You want to do that by using the... do you know what I mean? It's...
Yeah. No, it's very... Like, I can't decide whether it's antithetical or the perfect choice.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And that is the thing, and we are in our Gethsemane for that, because is it fantastic? Is it, you know, full high drag, or is it
awful? So, or do you have your head up your ass so much that you don't even realize what you're doing?
Exactly. But I think Jimmy's personal opinion is that they knew exactly what they were doing, because this was the production that Andrew Lloyd Webber has been waiting for, because he was like, I'd never wanted it to be in a proscenium arch. It's a rock concert. It's not meant to be, you know, sure. That's why he didn't like the film, because it's like, why are you sitting in a desert? It's not that. And I get that, because that, I think setting it in a desert is what makes people confused, because they're like, well, it's a Bible story though, isn't it? And you're like, actually kind of not.
Actually kind of not. It's,
in many ways. It's a really, really cool production. They did some really, really interesting stuff. There'll be there's a little documentary. I'll pop it in the show notes. But yeah, that's how they found their Jesus. And who knows?
Fascinating. You too could be the next Jesus, listener out there.
I know. What the hell is that? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's
It's weird.
Peculiar.
Yeah, it's strange enough to be cast as Jesus. It's even stranger to be cast as Jesus. Because people,
or like, sorry, you're not going to be Jesus,
right?
Like, what does that mean?
Was it like, did they like have crosses that they would like hand to them or take away from them, like roses from The Bachelor?
I don't think they did for this one. I don't think it was a showy. Because remember, I've told you about Over the Rainbow.
Yes, I've seen bits of Over the Rainbow.
I don't think it was as flashy. I didn't watch it because it was on ITV. That won't make any sense to you.
But I know what ITV is, thank you very much.
Yeah, but do you know why I wouldn't watch it because it's on ITV? Because
it's trashy.
No, because it has adverts.
Oh, yeah, that's a thing you don't have sometimes.
Exactly.
Because you pay a TV tax.
Yeah, £140.
A year?
A year.
Oh, that's much cheaper than my cable bill. That's awesome.
Well, I mean, no, that's compulsory if you want to watch TV.
I know. Do you know what's compulsory if you want to watch TV in the United States? $50 a month.
Seriously? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, don't get me started.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
yeah,
silly.
Be thankful for your TV tax.
I'm very thankful. Thank you, the UK. But a lot of people hate it because they're like, I was just paying for the BBC. But so that's fine. The BBC's fine. Anyway, we're not getting to that. So, yeah.
Yeah, good production.
You can see. Very good production. Go check it out. And yeah, I'm really intrigued. I can't gauge how our audience are going to feel about JC.
Yeah, I don't know. It's always... religious ones are always weird to me. Because I'm biased, but also assume that theater types are less likely to be religious types.
Uh-huh.
But that often adds an extra flair to religious musicals.
Yeah.
You know, because you come at it with less inhibition.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think... yeah, because I remember I was surprised with Godspell.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm ready to be surprised again.
Yeah. I've certainly enjoyed talking about this more than I expected.
That's good. That's good. I'm glad. I'm very, very glad. And I'm glad that you've been nice and open-minded enough to have a discussion.
Mildly.
No, you've done really well, Tommy.
Thank
I'm
you.
Proud of you.
Thank you. Okay. I haven't called Andrew Lloyd Webber a shoe at all.
No, you haven't. Well
done.
It's
my self-restraint, like Jesus would have done.
Exactly. Jesus Christ, Super Dean. Jeffrey?
Get out. I'm done.
Tell me what you think about your friends at the top. Who do you see beside yourself, the pick of the crop? Hey, Buddha, was he where it's at? Is he where you are? Could Mohammed move that mountain, or was that PR? Did you mean to die like that? Was that a mistake? Or did you know your message that would be a record breaker?
Mr. T, that was JC.
We are Jimmy, I'm so excited. Evita, Starlight Express, Love Never Dies,
Joseph. Song and Dance, oh, Tell Me in a Sunday.
The list is longer than I want it to be.
Yeah. Sorry, pal.
We'll get there.
And then we'll have to revisit some of them. For
all- no, I'm joking. Never.
I know. No, I do think about that because...
Yeah.
So, like, we try and...
Should
we tell them
out.
Like our secrets? Yeah. So we try and like space them out and alternate with Sondheims.
Yeah.
But we're gonna what are we gonna do when we run out?
I don't know. We need a third. They're only the big two. We need a third.
Exactly. Maybe by the time we get to the end of the list,
yeah,
then
Lin-Manuel Miranda will have 15 shows and we can just start talking about those.
Yeah.
Or Dave Molloy will have 15 shows and we can just start talking about those.
Well, that's a much better idea. Well, if you go by his like flow chart of ideas, he's got like 90 in the pipeline.
Yeah.
I understand that, though. So that was Jesus Christ Superstar.
It was indeed.
Tommy, you survived, and I am really proud of you.
I'm nervous, Jimmy, that in like 3 days, I'm going to get a Skype call again, and you're going to be like, we got to talk about it more.
Well, because
was that too meta of a joke? Everything. Like 3 days later, and you're going to like roll away the stone. Really?
Oh, it was meta. Sorry, it was meta. It's because I view it as a human story, Tommy. So let's talk about that. No, I'm joking. Let's move on.
I wonder if I can find it. And I'm nervous to tell you about it because I was thinking of using it as an Unsung Heroes. But I was Spotifying Jesus Christ Superstar, the album, on my ride home from work so I could listen to it one more time.
Uh-huh.
And I discovered a musical called Jesus Chris Superstar. The T is crossed out. And the subtitle is A Collection of Contemporary Comedy Musical Theater Songs.
Oh!
I didn't listen to it.
How intriguing.
Yeah.
That is intriguing. Jesus Chris Superstar.
Yep.
I like that. That's funny.
It's clever. It's very funny.
I'm intrigued.
2012. But I can't do it for Unsung Heroes now because now you know about it.
That's okay. Also, yeah, we need to let people know.
Yeah, we got to tell people. You got to suggest if you have an Unsung Heroes to suggest to us. You can only tell one of us.
Exactly.
Because if you tell both of us, it doesn't work.
Exactly. It's so funny though. It's so funny. So that I think we should make that point. And down the line, we should make that point.
Pick who's your favorite and message us privately about your Unsung Heroes show.
Exactly. It's so funny.
And I'm more than welcome to suggestions. I'm sure Jimmy is too.
But yeah.
Yeah, you can only tell one of us.
Exactly. So, goodness. Bless. Because as soon as it's done, it's wasted. We can never do it.
We can never do it because then we know about it.
Exactly. So please, like, stop. Otherwise, we just won't have anything to do. Like, the whole segment
is only going to be one episode.
Exactly. Hey, no. Two.
Yeah, we got one recorded. Get excited. It'll be coming out soon.
Ooh.
You have a quiz question, don't you?
I do. I'm going to tell you through quiz. So our last show, Jesus Christ Superstar, Banjo Driver, features a song by Felix Mendelssohn, uncredited. Our next show features a song by Ludwig von Beethoven, credited. What show?
What could it be?
Who knows?
If you want to get in contact with us, I'm Musical Mash on Twitter and Musical Theater Mash on YouTube.
And I am Asen Hendrix on both platforms. Or you can get in touch with us over on our show Twitter, which is @JimAndTomic.
Or you can go to our website, jimandtomic.com, which has a link to the Reddit discussion and to our Patreon.
Yes, please tell your friends all about us. Listen to our thing.
Don't tell your friends about our podcast. I mean, do tell your friends about our podcast, but don't tell your friends about our podcast. Just tell them all about us.
Yeah, exactly. Have you heard about this guy? You can collect figures about him. One of them is, I don't know, it doesn't matter. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Put the fork in the fridge. Go get a foot massage.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical, Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.